There we go.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Throwing Wrenches Podcast. This is Eric.
I'm Daryl.
Welcome to the auto podcast that's pondering the question, do you still want an EV?
On this episode of Throwing Wrenches,
EVs, are they still hot?
Eric buys a Bentley.
Rivian has some new ideas. All that and more on this episode of Throwing Wrenches. Watching the sun. Everybody once told me the world is gonna roll. Play that funky Daryl line, that funky bass line, Daryl Scott.
I never could play. I never actually.
No?
Can you play guitar or
no,
bass?
No, I thought about it really hard. And Professor Harold Hill's think method never worked for me. It
didn't pan out.
No.
Well.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. And I say it every time to join in the fun of the show. Please send us an email. info@throwingwrenches.com. We haven't gotten an email in a while to read on the pre-show. So please send that through. Or do a review. It can be heard all around the world. But I did check today.
Yeah, anything new?
No, because I was on a Windows computer and I had to go to iTunes and I had to open this window and that window and then it wanted an authorization. And guess what, folks? I couldn't even see the reviews. So if you gave us a review, I can't even honor you with reading it.
Do people still say Windows machine?
Shush.
As opposed to what, the Linux machine or the Apple II GS?
Yeah, you know what? You know what, smarty pants? If you don't know my friend Daryl Scott, well, rattle, rattle, thunder clatter, boom, boom, boom. You know, that could be the Car X Man, but it could also be Daryl Scott working on some home projects over the past few weeks. Bob Vila wishes he knew as much about cars as this guy. He's Daryl Scott.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. You're so kind.
Don't worry. Call the Daryl Scott man.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So if you don't know my co-host, well, pickups, yeah, he's got a few of those. Sports cars, yeah, he's got those too. So what about carbonara recipes? Well, I'll bet he's got a few of those floating around here too. If you look hard enough, you might even find some chicken cacciatore recipes too. He's the Pastafarian performance pickup artist. How do you like that alliteration? He's Eric Stahl.
Wow. Wow. All right. So, you know, I thought I had you in the bag there with the rattle, rattle, thunder clatter.
That's right. That's fine.
Yeah, good stuff there.
Glad you like that.
But I'm going to tell you what, man. Huh. My recipe game is on fleek.
Is it?
I'm telling you. I'm all about it.
Every time I talk to you, you're cooking or you're like posting stuff or stories are all food related.
Yeah, I know. I'm enjoying it. But you know what? It's spring, so I'm really looking forward to maybe getting outside of my house because what was it this morning when I walked outside? It was like frost in the windows and 30 degrees.
Yeah, it was bogus.
And this is March 27th. This is garbage.
Yeah, spring. It's spring. Technically spring.
Exactly. You know what's not garbage, Daryl Scott?
What's that?
Fort's Toyota Pekin. Find him on the web at www. He's going for a button. That's the reason there's a lag.
No, it's fine.
Bring it.
No, I was... Oh, wait, that's the wrong one.
All right. But you know what? Let me just hop right into the ad.
Okay, go ahead. Go, right. Just do that. Why is this on here? I need to change these hot pants, the hot keys. Hot pants? What am I talking about?
I don't know, but it's about cooking, I think.
All right, thank you.
Fort's Toyota Pekin, been our longest sponsor, and they've tolerated so much at this point. www.toyota-pekin.com, where you'll find all the new inventory of Toyotas that are coming and going, like the new Tacomas that are rolling in. Holy smokes, four Tacomas rolled in here in the last 2 days. Got a couple sports, got a couple SR5s, got some great, great models. I'm going to tell you what, man. We got this bronze, this new bronze color.
I saw your Instagram reel about that. Beautiful.
And with those TRD wheels
yeah,
you put on it.
Yeah, it's a nice looking truck.
You know, the coolest thing, and so I actually had a customer call me the other day. He said, and I work at Fort's Toyota, folks. It's a spoiler. This is like one of those off-script ads. You know, when you go to the radio station, they say, you know, for $200, we'll talk about your dealership personalized. Folks, this is so personalized because I live Fort's Toyota. Anyway, we got this bronze, the new bronze color Tacoma in, and the customer wanted the TRD Pro wheels. The TRD Pro wheels look great. They're not only functional, they're $300 a wheel, which when you compare them to like Rhino or Moto Metal or these other garbage brands, we're getting a super solid wheel, getting a great look, getting a factory warranty built right into it. throw some Nitto trail grapplers on like this guy did, you get a great-looking truck with all the factory warranty. Phenomenal-looking vehicle. So you can follow Fort's Toyota's Instagram, at Fort's Toyota, and you can also follow them on TikTok, at Fort's Toyota. Great, great stuff. I say that because, you know, I kind of post a lot of that stuff on there, right?
Yeah, you do. But you do a great job. And I'll tell you what, check out what they have. My wife and I just saw a new Crown rolling around in traffic, and there is... there's some buzz about that. It's a really unique-looking car.
What a misunderstood monster, though.
I agree. But I agree.
I think Toyota has totally failed on the Crown as far as advertising that car for the United States market.
It's the perfect size.
Everybody, if you read all the automotive reviews, it's a brilliant car. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best cars Toyota's ever made. It's one of the best cars they've ever imported. Americans cannot figure this car out. It's going to be a wasted opportunity if Toyota can't figure this out in the United States.
Unless you get your hands on one. I don't know.
Drive it. They're beautiful cars.
Yeah.
You'll never find a car with more accoutrement. You know, I like to say that word every episode.
I know. Yeah. I was going to say.
It's like a drinking game. Every time
bingo.
Eric says that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, I love it. I love it. Toyota-Pekin.com. Definitely want to thank them for their longtime support of the show. Special thanks also to our Patreon supporters. A little something we'd like to share, too. We dialed it back a little bit. I know our, I don't want to say our performance. Our performance this quarter has been less than stellar in terms of the number of episodes output. It's been a little low.
Yeah.
And that's because, as Eric mentioned, we kind of ribbed each other in the beginning there. I have been working on some household stuff, bringing my basement remodel around the corner. So hopefully the next show we might actually record in said basement. So
there's so much going on, too. I mean, yeah. It's not like we couldn't throw a show out every 2 weeks. Just a matter of us getting together, right?
Yeah, and some of that, too, is we could have cobbled a show together, but it wouldn't have been that great. So we want to give you
pish-posh
quality. We want to give you quality over quantity. But as a result, we did dial down our Patreon fee a little bit here. At any rate, we do appreciate our Patreon supporters. You know who you are. You got a great pre-show and a pre-pre-show.
Yes.
That's our new thing now. We just give you more content in the pre-show.
30 minutes of video? How ridiculous is that?
And what do
you
we
totally
talk about?
And you totally pander to the people in the video.
Pander? That's a hard word. I'd say delivered quality.
I ignore them completely.
I know.
I act like they're not even in the room.
People want eye contact.
You think?
I think so. They want to be acknowledged. Not going to be ignored, Eric.
I ignored them.
All right. So Patreon folks, thanks again for your support. And iTunes Premium folks, we love you guys, too. As Eric mentioned, throw us a review on iTunes if you haven't yet. And if you've recently discovered this podcast, you listen through our catalog of previous episodes, and you like what you hear, let us know.
Drop us an email, info@thrownwrenches.com. Mm-hmm.
Always love that feedback. Eric, speaking of feedback, I know that that you and I have talked for a long time about kind of what we want to do here for the next couple of months. We talked about maybe going on the road. We talked about maybe getting some other guests on the show. Any kind of thoughts or foreshadowing as to what you want to see happen over the summer?
An illusion of maybe what's coming forward?
Maybe.
Pekin Main Street and Main Street, Illinois, I think, is an organization. A friend of mine, Eric Reeder, and I have talked about getting him on a previous show or a future show. And I don't bring his name up lightly. Him and I have been talking quite a bit. I'd like to bring him on. Eric's been instrumental in bringing up small towns like Muscatine and the Quad Cities and revitalizing the riverfronts and talking mm-hmm. about, you know, what small towns mean in central Illinois and in places like that. So hopefully we'll get Eric on the next show. That's kind of the goal.
Yeah, I like that idea. And we look forward to meeting some new people, too. We've got a lot. The central Illinois car community always has a lot going on.
The guy who does the
meet at the marina.
I have talked, too. We could hopefully, I think, what's the next one, June or something like that?
I believe so.
We need to try an effort to get him on here.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'd like to also expand and get a couple of longtime listeners, friends who are also interesting folks worth getting to know and who contribute to the hobby in their own way. Try to get them on the show as well, because we do have, and I know everybody has their own areas where we've got a car scene in this city, or where I'm from, we've got a Cars and Coffee, and we do a meet every other Friday or something like that. We want to hear from you. If you do have somebody who's interesting and, you know, you're within relative driving distance, we wouldn't mind taking a road trip out and seeing what it's all about. I do want to get out to some of the Bloomington Cars and Coffee that they do at Towanda Plaza.
Is it picked up? Because the last time I went, it was pretty
terrible.
They've reorganized.
I think they reorganized and they did put a schedule
out. All right, that's
out.
Good to know. Okay.
And there's themes. So Ooh. There's different themes. So
do I have to dress up or anything or put
no.
decorations on my car?
Yeah. You dress like Charlie Chaplin. I'll see you there.
All right.
You'll be the only one with the mustache.
Screw you, Daryl. I'll do what I want.
No,
I'll
no.
dress like...
They have like an 80s night. They've got like a 80s day or whatever, or like imports, you know, things like different themes. And I think that's always fun, too, to bring things, different
okay.
folks
All right.
out.
So, we'll is see. So is that Bloomington Cars and Coffee? Is that their group?
I believe so. I'll find the flyer.
Because I don't see anything on my feed from those guys, so I'll have
okay.
to check it out. All right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll share that on the story here.
Sounds good.
All
Sounds
right.
good.
All right. So the first section of the show we call Projects, where Daryl and I talk about things we're doing in the garage. And it's been winter. And you know what? Spring showed up here at the end of February. It was like an Indian spring or something like that, where like it's nice and warm. Totally did the bait and switch. I'm like, oh.
For like 3 days?
Yeah. I'm like, this is great. It's 80 degrees.
Yeah.
And then this morning, I mean, it's the end of March, and it was 30 degrees this morning. And
yeah,
it was
colder.
Snow. Yeah. It was awful. It was this last weekend, my deck was covered with frost. I'm like, this is terrible. But in the meantime, you know, we're still trying to think about the car scene. We're trying, you know, I drug my convertible out of storage.
Oh.
You know, thinking, oh, it's perfect weather. And guess what? It's been rained on outside for like 3 straight days.
The green one or the black one?
The black one.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. So,
that's sad. I'm sorry.
But other things got going on. So there's a giant eclipse coming next week. Or 2 weeks from now. You're aware of that?
Yeah, April something or other, yeah.
April 6th.
A lot of hype. And there's a lot of hype around Illinois.
Well, so it's part of, like, I think from Cleveland or Toledo or something like that, through Indianapolis, down through Carbondale, down to Tulsa. It's during the midday hours. I think actually as it gets up, like, towards Albany, it, like, starts to stretch out. You know, it gets a long shadow. I'd be really interested to see what the eclipse looks like as you get up to the northeast.
Yeah.
And longer in the day. Because you watch a shadow. I'm a geek, folks. I admit I've already studied this way more than
no,
I should.
No, it's fine.
But
it's fine.
I was down in Carbondale for the last eclipse back in like 2017, 2018. It was cool. Unfortunately, a bunch of clouds rolled over our spot. But it's 100% eclipse spot here in central Illinois or southern Illinois.
You said it was pretty crowded, right? You were on the side of a road? Or
dude. No, we were at a campground that a family member of mine owns.
Okay.
But the drive home was 8 hours. What should have normally taken 3 hours to get home was 8 hours.
Just because it's all two-lane?
Not even. The Interstate 55, Interstate 57, choking with traffic.
Really?
Yeah, after the eclipse was over, people just got in their cars and drove home back to Chicago.
Huh.
And I've never seen traffic like that in my entire life in Illinois. It was awful.
Yeah. And so the amount of hype I've seen on social media and the news keeps talking about it, and the best places to view it is Carbondale again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they keep hyping it up.
It's midday. It's like 10:30 or 11 o'clock in the morning, I think, when it hits.
Think it'll be the same?
Yeah. I think it'll be worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I was getting to is that my camper, I talked to the wife and said, you know what we got to do? We got to go back down to southern Illinois. We'll take our camper down. We didn't have the camper last time. I took the kids down, took a tent. Was miserable,
yeah.
But we'll do it in the camper because we bought the camper 2 years ago. And what I didn't realize, an outdoorsy, somebody had already rented my camper, my own camper, because of my stupidity. Yeah, bring it.
Oh.
Yeah, bring it. I'll take it. I'll take that
Sorry,
hit.
That's fine.
somebody had already rented it for that weekend. I'm like, are you serious? And a guy from Morton, his name Brian, he'd already reached out and locked it in for 5 days. I mean, to be fair, I'm going to make like $400 on it.
That's not bad.
But he's driving it out of the Carbondale. Now, so what's happened is I bought the camper for $19,000, whatever, for when I want to use it. And now, because I put it on outdoorsy, I can't even use it when I want to because I've already let somebody else use it.
Here's what you need to do.
How stupid am I?
Buy another camper. Just do that. And then sell it.
So the biggest thing is I've been trying to get it de-winterized for this early April trip. Dude, I can't even put water in the water tanks because every night has been like freezing temperatures. It's
can't
been
trust
awful.
It. No.
And then Angela pulled it out the other day. So she was cleaning it the other day when I was out. And we found like rodent droppings in the drawers. I'm like, great. So she's cleaned that out. She pulled the mattress out. And I'm like praying to God the mattress doesn't have like a mouse hole in the side where it's like living in there all winter, right?
Nah, should be all right.
It was fine. But, you know, of course, I go into full panic mode. Put a new... anodized rod in the water heater because last year's one just came out in chunks. And I can't be 100% until literally days before this guy takes his camper.
And you're like, yep, we're good to go,
yeah,
I think.
And I changed the axle, and I changed the e-brake on the left or the right side.
You got that all squared away?
Yeah, what? I did it. Got it all handled.
Good, good. A lot of stress.
It's not worth it.
No.
It is not worth it. I mean,
when does a camper go up for sale? It's going to be pretty soon.
Now, so I have a family vacation this year in June. We're going up to Michigan for a family reunion.
Oh, cool.
And I blocked it out so nobody can rent it.
Good.
Because I'm smart that way, yeah, this time. And so I think this is going to be actually perfect because it's at my family has like a cabin up in the woods up near Gaylord, Michigan, way up north in Michigan. And we'll pull the camper up there. Ange and I will like hang out in there. Aiden, I don't care where he's in a tent or whatever he wants to do.
Sleep in the back of
the bunkhouse. Yeah, right. And I'm like, all right, we're going to use it. But that's like 4 or 5 days knocked off for her and I. You're right. When you start looking at the amount of days, I don't know. There's something about it's fun. Her and I had a good time last year in Indiana with it.
Yeah, you camped at the.
We went to the hill climb.
Yeah, you guys did that, and you had a nice little trip.
We did, and so it's expensive. I mean, you think about it, you could stay at the Ritz-Carlton for cheaper. You know,
just in terms of gas
what's cost you for the ownership, what's cost for depreciation,
yeah,
insurance, God knows I'm paying on that. There's all these hidden costs when you own a camper.
And maintenance, apparently.
Yeah, and I spent $200 or $300 on e-brake and stuff like that. I don't know, man. The camper experience, it's fun, it's unique. Fortunately, I have a big Morton building, so I can store the thing.
Yeah, you're not out. I mean,
I'm not like some people paying $200 a month or something like that, right?
I can see it getting a lot worse for people, depending on their situation.
Yeah.
But no, I think you guys just need to do another extended road trip. Take it out west.
I truly enjoyed the camper top thing that was on the Tacoma. I honestly, if I was going to do it again, and don't get me wrong, the Tacoma's great, and I would do the Tacoma in a heartbeat, but if it were me, I'd have a Tundra with an even bigger one. I looked this up. AT Overland makes a wedge type tent camper, rooftop deal for like $20,000, and you could have everything in there, the windows and the lights and the power and all
AC,
that stuff.
Yeah,
and I think that's the way to travel, because then you're not worried about dropping the camper off, renting a place. I mean, you just literally drive up to where you want to go, you park, you camp, you leave.
Yep.
And I think that's the best way. So whether that's a Class B camper, which is like a van, mm-hmm, that has everything you wanted, or whether it's a truck with a camper on the back, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, I could see that too, because then you're
still small though. I don't think you would like a Class B. I don't think that would be your thing.
No, I couldn't fit in half of this stuff. Even
I'm hobbit size compared to Daryl, so I can get away with it.
Well, it's the headroom for me. I mean, I'm a big guy as well, but just for me, if I have to duck everywhere, and with those truck, the campers that sit in the truck bed, it's pretty narrow in there, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's tight.
I mean, they do probably have little bump outs or something you could probably buy.
You could get the luxury ones at that point, though. You're wondering why you spent that much on a truck bed camper, right?
I camped in a fifth wheel one time. My father-in-law had a nice fifth wheel, and for a weekend we went to Carlisle Lake in it, and I thought it was perfect. But then I also dropped it off at his house and said, see you later. So I didn't have to store it. I didn't have to maintain it.
Right.
You know, it was one of those things. But I do definitely see the appeal. The camper you've got, it could be a moneymaker, but I'm glad you reserved your own camper for your own family vacation.
Right.
It's a good. That's probably a good idea to do. And the Eclipse, don't sweat it. What are you going to do for the Eclipse?
So I had originally like marked the days off to take, but I went to the last one.
Yeah.
And knowing the drama of driving back. So if you go to that Eclipse, I think you're a fool if you try and drive back same day. So I think if we go and I would tent camp it or something like that, I mm-hmm. would like drive back the next day. I wouldn't even try and get in traffic with all the people again. So I don't know. If we don't go, I'm fine with it. It sounds terrible. And you get you were there here in Peoria for the last one.
I was.
How much?
It was fine. I stepped out into the parking lot, looked up. I didn't stare at the sun, but I might have stared at the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Then I went back upstairs.
Okay.
The novelty isn't lost on me, but I also feel like, are we going to have more of those?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not saying I'm going to live forever, but I'll probably see another.
You know
one.
What? I was glad I did it with the kids when I did it the last time. And it literally is just like it's one of those life experiences. But as you get older, as you get aged, you're like, okay, I understand the cosmos.
Right.
Basically, a shadow passed over the world.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Lasted 30 minutes or whatever, or 15 minutes, whatever it boils down to. But is it worth all that?
I'd rather take my time
Halley's
off.
Halley's Comet would be like.
Yeah.
I could see that. That'd be like once every 100 years, and if you saw that. But life comes down to experiences. So it's one of these things, like, do you value that experience so much that it would enrich you? Then do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean,
buy the eclipse glasses.
Yeah, do the whole thing.
Get the whole, yeah.
I don't know.
Reserve your camper.
Dude,
now.
I'm telling you what. Talk about waffling and flippy floppy on this whole thing. I'm not the guy to ask for life experience on this stuff or life advice.
No, I like it. Yeah. Man, I forgot all about Halley's Comet. I was like 7 when that happened, and everybody's like, you won't see this again for another 150 years. I'm like, I might see it. I was so dumb.
Well, no, I think it's every 80 years, isn't it?
No.
Because Mark Twain saw it when he died and the year he was born.
Was it 80 years?
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know.
Yeah, look it up. We got some internet here.
It was such a big deal. And I don't even think. I think I went to bed.
Yeah.
75 to 79 years.
Yeah.
They can't even predict it. That's science.
Pathetic.
And the Earth is flat anyways. It's
yeah,
fine.
Right. And also we got some Celica stuff going on. I got the title to the red Celica finally. I don't know if I mentioned it on the last show, but the gal was super nice. I don't even know what to pay her. I don't know what to do. She's like, the title was $50. I'm like, and she went through all the labor of like having her daughter-in-law sign off on it, but she had the lien on it. She's from Springfield.
Sounds like a nightmare, but it's
it's
all done.
And so I feel like I just need to like send her a check for a couple hundred dollars because I never really committed to a price on the car because she never had the title, and the car's been sitting at the dealership for like 4 years.
Well. That's,
and with a bad transmission. It's not like it's a good car. This car needs some work. It's been sitting for a while. So, but this is one of those things like Catholic guilt.
Yeah.
If I don't pay her an amount that I feel like I justified my existence, then I will not be able to sleep at night. So,
do the right thing.
At some point, I'm gonna send her a couple hundred dollars and say, here you go, and feel better about it.
So that is a what year?
It's a 1995 Celica GT. It's the hatchback, not the small trunk one. And it's red. It's an automatic, which sucks, but whatever. You know, but I got literally have the car for nothing right now with a transmission that doesn't work. So transmissions aren't that terrible for that model of car. I can get them used on eBay for a couple hundred bucks, $500. But maybe it just needs an axle. We don't really know because,
he didn't diagnose it
that
thoroughly at the
no.
time.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, if I'm really lucky, the axle's broken, but I doubt it. Those cars had a problem, the reverse kind of going out on them, and the trannies went out. So I'm going to guess it needs a trans. Aiden wants the car really, really bad. That's my son. And
Trans in it.
Yeah.
Put a trans in it. Anything you wouldn't be able to find anything decent as a fun second car or just a fun, toss-around car.
Dude, that 2.2 liter that's in them, it's rock solid.
Yeah.
You know, they may have some valve guide seals that burn a little oil in startup, but realistically, they're 300,000-mile engines all day. Now, they are timing belt engines, so that means the crank seal, the cam seals, they all puke oil until you actually change those out with the timing belt. But realistically, that's another 150,000, 200,000 miles of pretty clean running on those things.
Would you have to drop the whole subframe and everything to get the motor out or trans out?
No. They're pretty easy. It's not like an Audi where you're pulling the whole front end of the car off.
Yeah.
No, they're just a typical Toyota four-cylinder. The timing belt's very easy to get to, so... not a bad deal.
No.
And the car ran. When it actually got towed to the store for the trans, I fired it up. It starts right up, but it's been sitting for 4 years.
Well, just go through it methodically.
Yeah. And one of the, because it's Toyota red, the clear coat is like baked off one of the quarter panels. So, but Aiden's talked about even doing like a spray the plastic stuff.
Plastic dip.
Yeah, there you go. So.
You can do have you seen that Poppy's Patina?
Mm-mm.
It's a wipe-on clear coat. And it actually, if you scuff the car.
Not
and
just transmission fluid? Just don't wipe transmission
fluid? Okay. No. Or linseed oil. I've seen guys do linseed oil, too. No, they actually, if you go to like poppiespatina.com, and I've seen a lot of the hot rodders that do patina builds.
Poppy's Patina.
Yeah. But you can use it to repair like crappy clear coat.
Yeah.
And you slough off the loose stuff, and this fills in the gaps, and it seals it. It's like a, I don't know if it's a resin. I don't know what it is. But
I have to look at that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Part of the deal with the car is I think my son would be totally cool if we kind of like rallied it out and put like a roof rack on it for skis and
sure.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with that. And I got
some big driving lights up front or something.
And I got steel wheels that go on it from another, that black Celica I bought came with steel wheels, so we could put some, you know, a little bit larger tires, but still keep without putting a lift on it.
Sure.
We can do a couple things to that car to kind of make it look cool and aggressive.
And different.
Yes, while still preserving it mechanically, so, and not getting stupid with it, so.
I love it. I love that idea. And the fact is, you're not losing money on the deal.
No, no. It's just a matter of just one more vehicle to get moving at this point. So,
I hear you.
You know, unloaded a couple cars over the last couple of years, and my son, for whatever reason, really hates his RAV4. I got him like an 04 RAV4.
I just saw him in an Instagram reel with it cruising down downtown Kenosha playing Jamiroquai. What do you mean he doesn't like it?
Yeah, I know. And, and you know how I made that car cool? I put like a roof rack on it with a bike rack and a kayak rack.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. It's a matter of changing the look of the car. You know, your car does say a lot about you, especially if you're a teenager. So to have the kayak rack and stuff like that, like, hey, look at me. I'm more than just this blue RAV4, right? You know.
I guess.
So I think there's just, again, kids deal with so much stress about their identity. I think that if we give them the Celica and we do something a little bit special with it, maybe you'll feel like it's a cool car. And dude, how many times were you like 19 or 20 years old and you felt like you were like, I don't know, inconsequential or, you know, people judging you? So if this is something that kind of brings you up a little bit, what's it going to cost me? Hardly anything. So let's have fun.
Just the fact that he can have two cars at school and be like, you know.
No. We're not going to have two.
You're going to make him sell the RAV?
Yeah. You know what? Anyway, well, that's a whole other conversation.
Oh, you're a bummer.
Whatever.
What a bummer.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Daryl.
This is bringing up instances that I – old arguments I had with my dad.
Yeah. Rattle, thunder, clatter, boom, boom, boom. Don't worry. Call the Car X Man. Do you remember that, Ed?
I do. I sure do.
So that
– with the little birds.
I don't know if that's like a Midwestern thing, if that went all across the country or around the world.
That's a good question.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you don't know that, Ed, it's – Car X was like your local, like Meineke or something like that.
Midas.
You know, yeah. Rattle, rattle, thunder, clatter, boom, boom, boom.
Back then.
Don't worry, call the Car X, man.
It's like the real 70s jingle.
Yeah, yes.
So, that's back when you like had to put a muffler on your car every 2 years.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Remember the muffler shops were everywhere? You're like, what happened? I don't know. Just mufflers blew up or something.
Well, I wonder about muffler shops anymore if they got the same business. Anyway, I said that all about Daryl because, you know, Car X, haha, you know, it is what it is. But Daryl has been hammering and sanding and doing all the stuff that goes with home improvement lately.
Yeah.
And so I think I alluded there. What is going on in the Scott household?
Well, we have a basement that actually has walls, lights.
And that's cool. You just started on that project, right?
Yeah. Actually, what was March, October 2020? So almost 4 years. But that's, you know, who's counting? No, the big thing is we actually got flooring and baseboards. I'm doing trim. It's to the point now where it looks like you could actually live.
It looks great.
And you could put furniture in.
You got
a
toilet?
I got a toilet. I've got plumbing. It's the nicest. I'll just go on a limb. It's the nicest that house has ever looked. And, you know, there's plenty of work left to be done. But it's all in stages, so we're on phase two right now of a five-phase project. And we should be rounding the corner here pretty soon. So hopefully by, I'd say probably another month, I'll have furniture, I'll have entertainment center, I'll have the TV down there, and we'll be using it. And my wife actually turned the laundry room into a laundry room with a little craft area. She's got a little nook. We got some cabinets we picked up from Menards, and she's happy. So the downside is I'm still not spending a lot of time on car stuff, but that should change once the weather hits. You know, it gets a little warmer. I can actually be out in my shop. I did make some time to work on fixing the brake lights in my 55 Plymouth, which went out. The brake light switch went out right before I parked it in the fall.
So I think you mentioned that when Sarah was driving it back from a car show.
Yeah.
No brake lights?
No brake lights. Unless she was like really standing on it.
Okay.
So basically no brake lights. So I freaked out and I'm like, well, I'll deal with that later. Well, about 2 weeks ago, I was approached to use the car in a shoot for work.
Seriously?
Yeah, for a commercial.
Oh.
And I thought, well, that's kind of cool. And they're like, yeah, can you, you know, I know you got a bunch of cars. Which
one
do you want to use?
What could they possibly be advertising for?
Well, I'll send you the commercial when it comes out. I'm not at liberty to say right now.
Okay,
but it's,
all right.
It's,
is it Liberty, Liberty, Liberty?
Liberty? Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's, I think you'll like it. But, yeah, I'm like, sure. They picked out the 55 Plymouth. Like, well, that's a pretty one. We want to see that one. I was like, okay, cool. And I'm like, there's no brake lights, but I'll get it to the chute.
Yeah.
And I did. I wired up a mechanical brake light switch. And
like a flip?
No. It's like an actual, like a modern one. It had a hydraulic switch that went out.
Yeah.
And I bought two switches to replace it, and neither one of them worked. And I'm like, well, I don't know what this is. The master cylinder still works. I still get good brake pedal, good pressure. I don't know what the hell to do. So I'm just going to put this mechanical switch in and mount it under the dash and make a little pigtail for the wiring. And I did. And it works great. And everything all worked out. And now I feel much safer about driving the thing. Or Sarah driving it, to be honest. So that got me kind of pumped up a little bit. And we had one of the nice days you talked about that was like many moons ago.
3 weeks.
I fired up the Fury, the 70 Fury convertible.
Nice.
That had been sitting for a while. And last time I fired it to move it in the fall, it was like October, and to kind of put it into storage, it kind of ran a little rough. And I thought, well, you know, great. Maybe it sucked up some rust from the fuel line or tank or something. Even though I replaced stuff, cleaned it out, put a new fuel filter in, I'm like, well, I don't know. And I wasn't sure about the points either. The points I couldn't get to sit and stay where I set them. It kind of wandered around. So I bought an electronic ignition setup, and I'm a new distributor, and I haven't put that in yet.
You've never done one of those before, have you?
No, I haven't.
Oh, this is like cutting edge technology for the Scott household.
Yeah, and so
how do the purists feel about this? How about the old car club? How do they feel?
Some are all about it, and others, of course, are like, you know, well, it's fine, just leave it as it is, and don't touch it. And I'm like, okay.
I'm anxious because I've had generally good reception from people who want to make a driver out of a car, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. That one is one. It's a nice original car. I'm not cutting it up. I'm not ruining it. But I also want to turn the key and go anywhere and not worry about 50-year-old stuff.
Yeah.
And it's at that point now where even 10, 15 years ago, I think parts for that were a little bit more easy to find. Now, you can find them. But because of the popularity of like the Hemi Cudas and the classic Mopar muscle stuff.
Sure.
It's stupid expensive. Hmm. It's stupid expensive for stuff. So I'm like, you know, I can get I'll just update it, make it drivable and a little more reliable, and we'll go from there. But I fired the thing up, and it lit right off and warmed up and kicked it off high idle, and I'm like, it sounded pretty good. So I don't know. To be continued.
So these electronic systems that go in there, it's basically a new throttle body. It's electronic throttle body?
Well, it removes your points and condenser and stuff underneath the distributor cap.
Mm-hmm.
It actually gets rid of those breaker points.
So this is in the timing, right?
The ignition,
there. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so you have Chrysler was one of the earlier ones, and I don't remember what year, but it was before GM and before Ford. We're one of the earlier ones to pioneer electronic ignition. And the 70, of course, still had points. And so what a lot of guys do is they'll take a later model ignition system, because the 318, all the motor is pretty much the same.
You can just bolt it in,
whatever. The trouble is the electronic ignition modules usually wear out, or they're old, so the reproduction ones aren't that great. I've heard all kinds of horror stories about stuff just flaking out. There's a guy in somewhere down south that took the old Chrysler blueprints for their setup and remanufactures a distributor and an electronic module that he has made here in the U.S., and it's supposed to work just like the original.
So what's the feedback loop on that? I mean, how does it – when it's doing the points up front and it's electronically doing them?
It's just a little – it's magnets. You have like a little reluctor wheel mm-hmm. inside the distributor, and it's basically just a series of magnets on like a little stick that's kind of just like – slotted.
Mm-hmm.
They glue them in or epoxy them, or I don't know how they do them. And then there's just like a little inductive pickup thing that knows where things are at.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having like breaker points and these little tabs, these little nylon tabs, you know, opening and closing those points, this little pickup wheel is just like looking at this magnet and being like, it's getting a signal from that going to some sort of electronic brain box.
Yeah.
It's getting 12 volts and then going into your coil, and some magic happens there.
So this thing isn't feedbacking off the startability of the car or anything like that?
No, it's not. No, it's not as thorough as that. It's basically just looking to see what.
I got all excited like you were going to put something in the, like the exhaust, reading the O2 sensors, stuff like that.
No, I mean, if I was doing like a fuel injection swap, that's become popular too.
Yeah, it has.
So like the Holley Sniper, that's a big one. There's a Fast EFI. There's about four big companies that make a kind of a bolt-on, like, hey, you have a carburetor.
Yeah.
Now you got a fuel injection setup. And yeah. You're really only swapping in a carb, a fuel pump, and some components.
And I thought, misunderstood. Yeah. I thought this was, I was got really excited because I thought you were just, bam, let's make this a daily driver.
I've thought about that. I'm not that smart.
It's not that hard, is it?
You can handheld program these things, and it's probably not.
So I take that back because my experience has been with like FJ40s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's a very basic, and it runs like 40 years of a model.
Right.
You're talking about a specific 1970 Plymouth Fury.
Probably the same. I mean,
you think?
I think so. Unless you're getting into some super high performance application. Yeah. And somebody out there who's probably played around with like a Holley Sniper. I've got a guy in my car club that's got a Holley Sniper set up on an old AMC motor in his Jeep Wagoneer. Mm-hmm. And when he bought the thing, it ran great. And now it's not running great. And he doesn't know. It's like, now what the heck do I do with this?
Sure.
So he's trying to find a guy who's willing to like learn how to tune it. And there's probably like some resources out there. You could probably call Holley and flash tune stuff, whatever. But I'll just be honest, like that's not a game I really want to get into.
Yeah.
If I did do something like that, I've thought about that. I've thought about ripping off, you know, the 2-barrel, put a 4-barrel intake, put a Holley Sniper, some sort of, you know, EFI setup on there and make this like a power tour car. Something that you could hop in and drive Route 66 and just like a modern car and not worry about kind of that having to tune stuff. I don't know if I'm going to do that. That's a lot of money. I don't know. It's definitely crossed my mind. And it has made a lot of older cars where you've got specialized or kind of one-off fuel components where you're like, heck with this. I'm just going to put a modern setup on there. And it works pretty good from what the people say.
All right. So, all right. So yeah. Work in progress as usual.
Work in progress. I'll just say I'm looking forward to summer, looking forward to working on the 55 Caddy a little bit more.
I saw the note about the 55 Caddy.
Haven't touched anything.
Roller?
It rolls now. I need to go through and I need to attack the brakes, and then I need to attack the fuel system on it, and then she should be good to go.
So you had done a bunch of work on the engine, and you did the power. Was it power steering pump or something like that?
Power brake booster, which is a weird Bendix hydrovac setup. Charging system's done. Water pump's done.
But you have not turned this car over.
I've turned it with a breaker bar. I've freed the motor was free. So I did soak the cylinders down.
But you have not engaged a starter on this car?
Not yet.
Wow.
I got keys made
for
it.
Dude, the temptation. Mm-hmm. That's just willpower beyond human belief, Daryl.
I don't want to rush it. I don't want to rush it.
Yeah, you definitely haven't done
that. Well, here's the thing. I mean, I've seen guys that are like quote-unquote car guys. They'll just put a battery jumper pack on something that's been sitting 50 years and fire it off.
I'm that guy. I would have done that.
Yeah, and then your rings are toast, and you're like, why is this car burn oil?
Yeah.
I don't like this, and you get rid of it.
Yeah.
Whereas you can actually bring something back from the dead, and if you do it methodically and in the right way, you can still enjoy. That 47 Chevy that I got sat from 1973 to 2010. And everyone's like, oh, you're going to have to redo the motor. The rings are shot. This is shot. All this is shot. Guess what? I put about 10,000 miles on that car. You know how much I put into it? That much.
I think I'm going to make a new sticker idea. It's going to be Orson Welles sitting behind the wheel of that Cadillac. And we shall start no car before it's time.
we will have no wine before it's time.
Yeah.
I love it. Actually, that's a good... I know, and trust me, I've heard it all. I've had people.
Nobody's mocked Daryl Scott.
I've had plenty of friends like, what do you, like, do blank or get off the pot, dude? Like, what? Yeah. Are you going to sell that car? You're not going to do anything with it. I'm doing stuff. The basement is going to be, once I get that behind me, I think, and I'm farming out the rest. I'm farming out the rest of the workout just so I can get back in the garage and work on what I enjoy working on. So that's where I'm at.
There he is. He's got a plan. He's Daryl Scott.
Yeah, right.
All right. You ready to move on?
Yeah, maybe.
Ready to stop talking about the
the
mounting projects in the Scott Auto Museum of North Peoria.
It's fine. Right. Yeah. News?
All right. Let's move on to news.
High tech.
All right. And world news. I tell you what, we've got a couple stories we're going to slam through here. We picked up a lot of stories over the last 5 weeks here, whatever it's been since we did a show. But this story is basically counterintuitive to everything you've heard lately about EVs. BMW sees top-end EVs driving profit even though demand cools. BMG AG said its top-end electric vehicles like the 7 Series and the X7 and the Rolls-Royce Spectre will drive profit this year, even though faltering global demand weighs in on the broader EV sales. The German luxury car maker expects its pricey models to be its key contributors to its 8-10% margin for automotive segment, in line with its long-term target. BMW sees overall sales increasing slightly. That's from Bloomberg. You can click on that link to follow along and read that article. Because really, lately, the news has all been about EVs are like tanking all these auto manufacturers, right?
Yeah, at least in some respects, except China, which we'll talk about later.
But okay.
yeah. And also the premium vehicles are, that's why you see so many of them.
Yeah.
You see so many of them because that's where the money is. And they're just frankly, that's what they're going to sell.
Yeah. And think about this. If you have a Rolls Royce, you have a 7 Series BMW, you're not putting 100,000 miles in that car in 5 years, right?
Usually not.
Those cars are like garage princesses. They get like 2,000 or 3,000 miles a year. Guess what? Premium EV, probably perfect for those people, right?
Yeah. You still get the status, but you can also rack up the miles and not worry about it.
Yeah. Here's another article that's kind of sitting here. Nissan returns to its sales playbook as it tries to move its old Rogue supply. Are you familiar with the Nissan Rogue, Daryl?
I am.
It has a problem with the Nissan Rogue, Nissan does. It's turning into its old playbook to fix it, though. Even in 2024, Rogues are dropping off the Nissan stores this month. Rogues are dropped off at Nissan stores this month. Edmunds shows that the brand's dealerships have as many as 24,000 of last year's models of the crossovers on their lots. It has a big-time issue with its bestseller, said the retailer. So I think the Rogue is basically the equivalent of the RAV4 or the Honda CR-V, right?
Yeah, small entry-level SUV.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It said that they, in a memo, that Nissan is offering dealers $1,000 for each of its 2023 Rogues that's sold by its March sales targets in the compact crossover, which vary by stores. Dealers may count the 2024 Rogues toward the sales goals, but the bonus is paid out on last year's models as well. So if dealers miss a target by even one vehicle, they don't get the bonus for any of them. So I think the takeaway from this article is, if you're looking for a Nissan Rogue, haggle your brains out right now. Right? Especially if it's the end of March. We're March 27th as we do this show. We got to get this show out so all those Rogue buyers get one right now.
If you go on their website right now, Nissan actually still has 2023 Rogues available.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. This is, you can actually buy.
Are you at Uftring on their website?
No, just as a
oh no, seriously?
The international site, yeah.
Ouch.
Because you can still build and price them. I mean, obviously you're not going to build one, but you can go and look and get a quote from a dealership. They actually have stuff left over from 2023.
That's brutal. That is brutal.
It is sad.
If Carlos Ghosn was here, none of that would happen.
That's right. Yeah, a lot of this seems to happen with, I'd say, models that are a little less prestigious. Like, I remember Mitsubishi had this issue a couple years ago where, like, nobody's buying Mitsubishi. I'm like, yeah, nobody has been. For the longest time, Jeep had, like, Compasses and stuff on the lot forever. And they were kind of like, please. Ford, with their Escape, not the last generation, but the ones that were still boxy.
Yeah.
I remember that there were a ton of those. So this is like 2014.
Dodge Journey, I think, was the, yeah.
Dodge Journey, same thing. They had, but they all do have that same kind of price point. It's mid-20s to upper, mid to upper 20s, kind of entry-level cars that are kind of like blah, but you usually see them in like rental fleets and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Nissan, you can always get a Nissan at a rental.
I do feel bad because like 24,000, in this day and age where everybody's minding their bottom line and like production and monitoring stuff in real time.
And inventory was hard to get. I mean, let's think about this. I mean, we couldn't even get a RAV4 in the lot here for the last 2 years, and now all of a sudden they're starting to show up.
Yeah.
And they're sitting on all these.
That's a ton of money sitting on lots and resources that had already been depleted. I mean, maybe that could have gone into making cool stuff. But anyways, so the Nissan Rogue, like Eric
350
said.
350Zs, right?
Yeah, right. If you want a Rogue, go get you a Rogue.
Yep.
All right. So speaking of EVs, let's go to China now. China, this story comes from a listener who shared it with us from the Financial Times of London. China EV push leaves. Let me start over.
You got this.
China EV push leaves zombie factories in its wake.
Mm.
Right. Plants geared to petrol engines are mothballed as foreign car makers lose market share. And basically what they're talking about is they isolate Hyundai in this particular example. But in 2017, Hyundai invested $1.15 billion in a new factory in southwestern China.
You didn't say the name of the town, Daryl.
Chongqing.
Chongqing.
Yeah, sure. Okay, southwestern China, with the goal of reaching an annual output of 300,000 international, oh my gosh, internal I'm going to zoom in and get my font
I
bigger.
Zoomed. I'm at 125% of my doc.
Dude, we're so old.
Yeah.
6 years later, anyways, the goal was to produce 300,000 internal combustion engine cars. Okay. 6 years later, the rapid switch by Chinese consumers to EVs has stalled sales, and that forced Hyundai to sell the factory in December. That's it. After, 7 years, they said, the heck with it. Wow. I'm out. We're selling it for less than a quarter of their total value of their investment. And the reason they're doing that is because the Chinese market has adopted EVs quite a bit more than other markets. Here, I highlighted this part, which I found most fascinating about it. They basically talk about the peak of ICE stuff being sold there and then EVs. And they say while some older factories in China, this is similar to other issues like Hyundai and some other manufacturers there, other factories might be repurposed for plug-in hybrids or battery electric vehicles in China. Others will never produce another car, posing a problem for both foreign and Chinese companies. Many car makers in China ultimately face two choices: leave the factory mothballed or crank out some volume and send it to Russia or send it to Mexico.
Wow.
And that's a quote from a guy who is the head of China in Chrysler. Chrysler in China.
Russo.
What is wrong with me? And he basically says, hey, you know, these factories that still produce internal combustion stuff, we're just going to crank stuff out and send it to Russia or Mexico. And you see that, I don't know. That seems to be kind of the stuff that we used to do to countries like China, where it's like, hey, this is no longer a thing here. Yeah. Let's crank it up and sell it cheap in another country.
Here's
far
a bunch
away.
Of Cavaliers.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you see that with German automakers. They still make, like, in China, you can still buy, like, a Volkswagen Quattro, like an old school or Quantum, like that, what they call the Santana there. It's like a 70s car.
Yeah, but think about that, the Beetle, like in Brazil or something like that.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Beetle was made.
Let's make a car that's obsolete across the world, but we'll still push them out somewhere, right?
Because they're cheap and we can still make a profit and it just pays for itself.
Yeah, yeah. Barely until the end.
Yeah.
Until the fumes of the manufacturing process.
It's just bizarre to me that that's the current situation in so many instances. But it also makes me wonder how much of industry was built to support that Chinese middle class, the growing consumer market over there, and how quickly the evolution happens, whereas after 5-6 years, like, yeah, we're done. We're just selling. We're 100% done.
Sure.
Whereas maybe it's like, hey, let's shift. Let's reinvest. Let's do this. They're just walking away from it. I thought that was very, very telling, even if I couldn't read half that story because I can't read.
Well, it was a dandy. It was a big one. It was two paragraphs. Oh, I mean, that was a tough one.
Anyways, that's our world news.
Anyway, national news, and this is the biggest news of the day, actually. This is ongoing right now. This is live, local, late breaking. GM, Ford, and other manufacturers, I'm sure, will reroute Baltimore shipments after a bridge collapse. This is from Reuters. U.S. automakers General Motors and Ford will reroute affected shipments after the bridge collapse in the U.S. has shuttered the port to Baltimore. But the company said on Tuesday the impact will be minimal. The Port of Baltimore is the busiest U.S. port for car shipments, handling at least 750,000 vehicles in 2023, according to the data from the Maryland Port Administration. Motor vehicles and parts accounted for 42% of all Baltimore port imports. More importantly, Daryl, car from Japan.
Oh.
Everything from car from Japan goes through the Port of Baltimore. I don't even know what I'm – I mean, think of all the Helixes, all the Land Cruisers – all the the weirdo Lexus models that are basically Toyota models in Japan. I mean, what are the Japanese car geeks going to do?
I don't know. I hope
there's got to be another port opening up somewhere.
I would hope so.
I'll have to go to Lauderdale.
Well, Baltimore, we talked a little bit about this before we started rolling. Baltimore gets a lot more traffic than I think anybody really thinks about. When people think about shipping from overseas, they think of...
You think of L.A., right?
You think of Los Angeles, Long Beach, you think of that. Or for some reason, I think everyone's mind goes to, like, New York. I don't know why.
I don't think I ever thought of New York, but I definitely think California for everything. I mean,
yeah.
I always think you're not going to go run South America. Why would you go through the Panama Canal when you're going to bring something to the United States? Because you think, just dump it on a train, dump it on a truck, just drag it across country. Mm-hmm. But Baltimore does get a ton of traffic.
Yeah.
From Japan, car from Japan, everything goes through Baltimore. Makes no sense to me, right?
Logistics-wise, no. But maybe you get into that weird thing where it's cheaper to get a container ship because stuff's going there anyways. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's cheaper to get a whole ship and just, you know, rail ship the rest of it. Or if you get a car delivered from Baltimore, like, you're still going to pay truck transit wherever you go. Baltimore was also a huge, you know, immigration point many, many moons ago.
Yeah.
Boston, I thought, had a fair amount of that too. But maybe Boston's too developed now or something. The whole bridge situation, that Francis Scott Key Bridge,
Did you watch the video? I
did.
Yeah.
Why do we need to see that over and over? I mean, it's one of those things where people lost their lives. It's a tragedy.
Yeah, I will say that. Sometimes we make some jokes about too soon, but them showing the video over and over, and there's car headlights on the bridge as it goes down.
Yeah.
It's kind of gross in some ways.
Does it remind you of that earthquake in 89 where they had that video too? San Francisco, where was it the Bay Bridge, where they had the double-decker collapse?
During
the earthquake.
That's right.
Just horrific, horrific scene, and we're not going to see that repaired anytime soon. That is such a logistical feat of engineering that has to happen.
It is crazy to me, the segmentation of a metal bridge like that, the way it just falls off the pillars. I was kind of shocked by that. So, like, when the Minnesota Bridge fell down a couple of years ago, so it's like one slat of concrete, and I don't remember, maybe one or two segments fell down. That literally was like a ribbon being pulled on that metal bridge when it hit. It pulled down like six segments, right?
In really short order.
Yeah,
and it goes to show too, engineering a bridge is not easy.
No.
I know we've been doing that as human beings for centuries now, traversing water and different ways of, making bridges and spans and stuff like that. But it does – it 100%. We're – in central Illinois, we are redoing that Route 150 bridge, the 24 mm-hmm. bridge there. And that's been a multi-year project. I think we're on year three.
We have between Pekin – in Peoria, 150, and there's four bridges that span the Illinois River.
Yeah, and as I drove over here tonight on 150, I looked at the bridge. There's three spans, right? There's two current ones and then the new one they're building next to it, which is, three times the size and completely different. It's almost like a steel suspension bridge.
Yeah.
But I looked at – that's what I started looking at. I'm like, well, these are all three different construction methods.
Yeah.
And they're only, probably 50 years apart from one another.
Yeah.
I don't know how old that Francis Scott Key Bridge was, but it definitely looked like one pillar took everything out. And it does also highlight, apparently, I don't want to get all conspiracy theorists, but there were 911 calls. There was a mayday, I guess, that went out. There was a police presence on that bridge to try to get traffic off. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, that tragedy happened. We are going to definitely see some economic impacts from this.
I would think Baltimore. So if you look up the whole area, Chesapeake Bay, it's a pretty big span. I mean, it goes all the way up towards Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
past Baltimore, past Washington, D.C. You don't really realize how deep that goes in. I mean, really, I had no idea. You go past D.C., you go all the way up to Baltimore. How much shipping traffic must be going up through there? It's insane.
It's quite a bit.
Yeah. Now, that bridge is basically a ring road around Baltimore, and I don't think it's – as far as economic impact, it's probably not huge. It's probably going to affect some commuters trying to get their way up to Philadelphia or something like that. But realistically, it's not going to cut off Baltimore. But I would think if you're trying to get to Baltimore – I mean, think about this. Just cutting and welding and trying to move everything out. There's a lot of metal in the ground. So remember when we were having the shutdown out in L.A.? All these boats are parked out to sea.
Right.
I mean, you got to be talking about at least 2 or 3 weeks, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, because you also have all the investigation that happens. So usually they don't remove the stuff.
Well, I don't think they have a choice. I mean, you think about concrete and steel. It's underwater right now. It's terrible weather. It's March.
Yeah.
Things are going to suck there for a while. So I guess maybe there's a way to relocate. Maybe there's some other ports. Man, I
don't know, but I do feel for, obviously, the victims, the people who were involved in that, but also the folks who have to recover all that. That's just got to be an absolute nightmare. So, mm-hmm. Definitely going to see some ripple effects for sure. And if you aren't sure, that story there in Reuters definitely highlights just how much not only motor vehicle stuff, but also just regular shipments and commerce goes through that port of Baltimore. Wow.
Yeah, terrible. So, yeah, we wish well for everybody who's affected by that, for sure.
All right, another news in Washington, the Washington, D.C. area. We've got some Biden administration news. Eric, you want to take that one?
Yeah, sure. It's from Bloomberg. The Biden administration moved Wednesday. This is breaking news as well. They're going to throttle pollution for the nation's cars and light trucks, are they? Imposing tailpipe emission limits so stringent they will compel automakers to rapidly boost sales of battery electric and plug-in hybrid models. Though the near-term requirements were eased after the pushback from automakers, the Environmental Protection Agency mandates would nevertheless require manufacturers to make a rapid shift towards zero-emission vehicles. The National Automotive Dealer Association, NADA, said it would the regulation outpaces the consumer demand, adding that the group is highly skeptical that consumers will adopt EVs anywhere near the levels required. And I do believe this was a move from like 2027 to 2030 or something like that. Is that what they bumped around?
Yeah, the date.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2032.
Okay.
EPA limits tailpipe emissions through the model year 2032. These are kind of considered, I guess, the final mandates.
Yeah, this is, in my mind, and I'm not trying to be political, I'm not trying to be, you know, pro-Democrat, pro-Republican, but
sure.
I really do feel like the Democrats are really pushing a hard, hard policy through that while they have power, they're going to try and knock that through. But if anything changes in Congress or the White House the next year, God knows. And I think that they tried to really make this like solidified so that it was hard to change, right?
I believe I haven't dove in enough.
Dig into this more the next episode because there was a time when you and I talked a couple years ago where 2030 was like the baseline where, you know, a lot of European countries and Massachusetts and California were like, okay, 2030, that's a good baseline. We're at 2024, and not a whole lot has moved on the needle, right? And now we're starting to watch some slide back on EVs, and there seems to be some desperation maybe. And it wouldn't be out of line to think that the EV manufacturers are like, hey, people aren't buying our cars fast enough. But, man, it's not the government's job to make that happen. You know, I think at some point, you know, people have to have good conscience to it. And it has to be good infrastructure to make it, you know, logical for their bank book, right?
I'd like to see the number, this past $7,500 tax incentive. I'd love to see how many people took advantage of that.
Well, they ran out on some models.
Just as a whole, I'd like to see that. I'd like to see the adoption of solar nationwide because seat of the pants, driving around my neighborhood, I'm like, oh, that's house got solar now. Yeah. They got solar now. It's become more and more of a thing. And so
it's economical, though.
It's economical and as people are in that natural progression of like remodeling or like I'm going to put a new roof on my house. Hey, before I put this on, maybe I'm going to look at this because it'll all time out. And certain states too. Certain states seem to be a little bit more of proponents of it.
Yeah.
Or
other. And those have always been the same states for years and years.
Sure.
We know who they are.
Yeah. No, I would like to actually just take a look at that because it would put into perspective just kind of consumer sentiment and where things are headed.
Mm-hmm.
I still think, I don't know. I feel like definitely this year, in the last year, I feel like at least here in the States, there's been a shift to, well, EVs came and went, bye. You know, there's definitely been a little bit of that.
Definitely been the news lately. I would agree with that.
And I don't know if that's just the narrative.
Well, and also we're super hyper conscious of Rivian and light truck sales and EVs have dropped like a rock
already.
Yeah. And it's a niche market and there's a couple companies trying to do it. And a lot of those people were pre-sold, you know, and once that pre-sale wears out and you got an $80,000 or $90,000 EV truck.
Yeah.
Where's the regular consumer who wants to drive that thing to work every day? They're not out there, I don't think.
I just had a friend on vacation down in Tennessee. He texted me. He's like, hey, man, I finally saw a Cybertruck in real life. And he's like, it was not impressive.
I saw one when I was driving back from Tucson.
Did you?
It was on a transport, though.
Okay.
But it didn't look – I expected it to look gigantic. It didn't look that big, really.
No, compared to – everything else?
Whatever was on the transport with it. I just expect it to be like this giant mega thing, like a Hummer or something like that. Maybe it is. Maybe my perspective is lost. But
I still haven't seen one of those in the wild, and I haven't seen a Hummer, but definitely seen the Rivian. I saw a new Rivian SUV on a used car lot at Jaguar Land Rover Peoria.
Seen a lot of Rivian trucks on the used car lots, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. And yeah. I thought, of all the stuff on the lot, that was probably the coolest one to look at. But I don't know what they're asking. And I do know for a while, at least locally, and probably even you know across the board nationally, that the resale value on those were crazy high.
Still, yeah, I still agree up there. That. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Still, I mean, it's a luxury car. You're talking about hard to get.
Yeah,
you know, definitely in that luxury car price. So,
yeah, we'll talk more about Rivian in local news. Yep. We do have some updates that we want to bring you on there.
This next article is just this has been a glaring issue that we've noticed a lot of at the dealership level. But this comes from Automotive News. Electric vehicle owners are noticing vehicle tires wearing faster than those on gasoline-powered cars, on their EVs. According to J.D. Power's 2024 U.S. Original Equipment Tire Consumer Satisfaction Study, apparently J.D. Power's does a lot of studying, they found in a study that highlight that EV owners are having less satisfaction with the durability of their tires, expecting them to wear similar to gasoline-powered tires. However, EV tires naturally wear quicker because of the greater vehicle weight and the higher torque. And this is a stone-cold fact. Tesla's actually done a very good job over the years of having special tires that are set up for their cars. And I would say they compensate a better probably than regular traditional ICE manufacturers just throwing regular old tires in their cars.
Bridgestone Ecopias or
something. Yeah, they're going to wear faster. And the weight and the torque, like they said, definitely going to wear these tires out. Man, every time a 16-year-old gets a car and they inherit it from their parents, I see bald tires. And I have to say something to the parents like, hey, I think your kid just got their driver's license. Oh, yeah. I'm like, well, they're wearing the tire down, especially the driver's front or whichever one's getting the most torque vectoring on, you know, on on a front-wheel drive car. And EVs, you don't have to be a 16-year-old for that to happen. It's a natural progression. And then the amount of weight, you know, that we talk about. The Hummers, we talk about the Rivians. I mean, we're talking about trucks that are 6,000-7,000 pounds on some of these.
They're beefy.
Is it 8,000 for a Hummer or something like that?
The Hummer truck is, I forget what it is, but it's off the charts.
It's a ton of weight, man. And you can't just put a regular old passenger tire or LT tire on those trucks. So this is a problem that's not going away, and people are going to have to know that when they're buying an EV.
Yeah, that's actually very one of those stories that people don't really talk about too much.
Not being defeatist on the EVs.
It's a fact. Yeah. It's a fact. All right, so let's take a look at some more kind of dealer news.
Interest rates.
Here's a title comes out of Automotive News. Dealers see the good and bad out of unchanged interest rates. Right now, the average interest rate on auto loans for new vehicles was 7.2%. That was in the last quarter. Yeah, it's up there.
That hurts.
Last quarter of 2023, that's up from 6.1% a year ago. That's according to the credit rating agency Experian. The average used vehicle auto loan charged 11.9%.
Wow.
That's up from 10.4% a year ago. So, wow, we're almost at 12% for a used car loan. Average. Cox Automotive chief economist Jonathan Smoak told Automotive News anticipation of future rate cuts hurts today's auto market. So if you're in the market for a used vehicle, buy old.
Dude, it's crazy. I can't get over it. The price of new cars gone up. I mean, they've all gone up, and then to see these rates.
Do you listen to Dave Ramsey at all?
I used to. I can't imagine what he's saying right now.
No, it's crazy. It's
well, he can't even tell you to go buy a used Honda Accord. That's what he used to do. Dave Ramsey would be like, all right, rice and beans, go out and buy a $4,000 Accord. You can't do it.
No.
Sorry, Dave.
No, it's more like a $15,000, Nissan Rogue. That's what you're trying to buy.
No, go buy a 23 Rogue. They're a great deal now.
They're a really good deal right now. I think you shall go get one. So nasally. Anyways, I think the sad part about that is that people—that's the average—is 12. Well, let's just say we'll call it 12%.
That means for every guy who's getting 5%, there's somebody getting 16.
Well, think about the folks that have less than stellar credit. What are they paying these days?
30.
It's got to be 20.
Well, it's always been that. I mean, people with secondary finance was 25-30% anyway, so they're not getting any better deal.
I don't know. I'm just, man. What was your first interest rate on your first new car?
Well, I don't think.
Or first car you bought.
I always paid cash. It was up until 1996 or so. We bought a Celica. This shock you. We bought a 93 Celica, and I think our rate was probably 6 or 7%.
Yeah, I think that's my first one was like 6.3% or something.
Yeah.
With
I remember our homeowner rate. We bought a house in '94. I think our rate was like 9 or 10%. And CEFQ, I'm like, you know, they didn't give us a break, even mm-hmm. though we had our accounts with them and everything.
They're like, yeah, this is what the going rate is.
Yeah, thanks, like, a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know,
members.
Hometown. Yeah.
What a perk. Yeah, membership of this credit union.
Members first, baby.
Ugh. Okay. So, interesting stuff there. And then I threw this in here. This is, consider this national news. Stellantis uses, quote, mandatory remote work day to cut 400 white-collar jobs.
What does that mean? Mandatory remote. Yeah. How could you cut jobs with a mandatory remote work
day? So check this out. So basically, white-collar workers at Chrysler parent Stellantis have reason to be nervous if they're ever receiving a company notice telling them it's mandatory that they work remotely on a particular day. That's what happened to 400 or so of their colleagues on Thursday of this last week. They were informed via a notice that the next day the carmaker would be holding an important operational meeting that required specific attention and participation. So to ensure everyone could effectively participate, the notice continued, we've decided to implement a mandatory remote work day. Employees, it indicated, were expected to work from home unless they were instructed by their manager. And then what happened? They were all laid off.
So, mandatory work day, we want you to go home, get on the computer. By the way, we don't want you in the office, and we're going to tell you, you're gone.
Yeah, yeah. And then
you're
you log in.
You're out of here.
Everybody joins the meeting. Everybody hear me? Am I a mute? No?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
You're fired.
Yeah. Am I a kitten? No, I'm not a kitten. No, there. Okay.
And then the meeting ends.
Wow.
So the automaker, which counts Ram, Jeep, Chrysler, and Dodge among its brands, said in a statement, as the auto industry continues to face unprecedented uncertainties and heightened competitive pressures around the world, Stellantis continues to make the appropriate structural decisions across the enterprise, the USS Enterprise, to improve efficiency and optimize our cost structure. Well, at least they're being efficient and using everyone's time wisely. Here's my beef.
Yeah, let's hear it. Is this your hot take?
Here's my hot take.
Is this your hot beef?
This is my hot beef, yeah. My jumbo beef. The funny part about all this is, okay, so you made everybody work from home.
Yeah.
They're not in the office. They won't have an office freak-out incident.
Mm-hmm.
There won't be some HR debacle.
There won't be any falling down with Michael Douglas?
No.
Okay.
No, hopefully not. How do you get their laptops back? Do a prepaid envelope.
They probably got to come back in the office and like get their tidbits around, you know, their stuff around the office.
I don't know. My lovely wife, who worked in finance for many years, has been laid off several times in finance. Thanks, finance. She's no longer in finance.
Yeah.
But the two times that they did it, one time they're just like, keep everything. Like, they sent the laptop back, but they're like, she had, like...
Keep the trash can and the desk and everything.
Paper shredder.
Yeah.
I can't even think about what all that, but it was basically like the rest of the home office stuff. They're like, yeah, just go ahead and keep it
so
all.
So generous.
Yeah, right. Thanks.
Thank you.
And then the other one, most recently, was just kind of like, not only we're going to lay you off, you'll get severance and all that, but then also you have to, in order to get your severance, you have to go on these like pre-employment preparation classes that we're going to set you up with. So in order to get your severance, you had to sit through HR with the same people that laid you off. And then learn like how resume tips from them.
Oh my God!
You know,
do you have a LinkedIn? Let's help you build it.
How awkward is that, though?
Yeah.
That's the whole thing about remote work and remote firing of people, laying off. Like, that, hey, okay, good. I don't have the awkwardness of being at a table or at a desk with somebody and being like, you know, this awful George. What was that movie with George Clooney? We just fired everybody.
Oh,
Up in the Air.
Yeah, Up in the Air. Yeah,
yeah. So you don't have that awkward interaction. But then afterwards, it's like, how do I get my stuff back? How do I, you know, what if I had a locker? What
right.
if I don't know. It's weird. 2024 is weird, yo.
Was Julia Roberts in that movie? I can't remember.
No, it was Anna Kendrick and somebody else.
Now, you alluded to it, but we did not have the local news with Rivian in it.
Oh.
I think we did, but somehow it got deleted, and I'm sure that was you.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah.
But anyway,
things.
On March 7th, Rivian introduced some platforms here, the R2, the R3, and the R3X, built on a new midsize platform.
Did you say R2?
R2, but I didn't say D2.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not.
There's an opportunity there.
Yeah.
Waka waka.
Yeah. So anyway, there was this giant press release from Rivian, and Rivian's been getting kind of battered because they have topped off as far as the big ones, the R1. And the R1S or something like that, which is their sport, their truck, and then their SUV. I can't remember their models. So they had a big press release, and RJ Scatteringe came out, and he talked about stuff, I think, out in Laguna Beach. and showed off some new models. And what essentially came out was he was talking about they're going to build this new midsize model at their new Georgia plant. But they were literally talking about 2026, 2027 for these new models.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't look a whole lot different than the SUV that comes out. But then he also popped out what I would essentially call a hot hatch.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's a cool, cool car. And he also said, by the way, because, you know, we're going to try and save some money and all that, we're going to make these cars in Bloomington Normal, which I feel like Michael J. Fox and Spin City were sitting there saying, you know what we need to do, RJ? Man, we talk about that Georgia factory, but then we also need to make these cars in Normal because we don't have the money to build that factory in time to get these cars out on. And yeah. I think that's where we're going right now with Rivian.
Probably.
I think Rivian does have the capability to build some cars in Bloomington Normal, which, again, they're our neighbors. We hope they can do as much as they can successfully. But this Georgia plant is still a bit of a pipe dream. They're burning billions of dollars every quarter. And to build this factory in Georgia in time before they run out of money, it's going to be interesting to see if they can get some funding.
Well, and see if they get a little bit of market share with those other ones. This is the other, I forget what the MSRP did they say? Was it 35, 40?
Okay.
45, something like that.
There we go. The R2 and the R3 will feature two battery sizes, which is good. I will argue that the R1 or whatever that thing is, it's overbuilt. We don't need a quad motor 4x4 truck for most people.
Of course we do.
We don't need an $80,000 quad motor. How many people? You could put a single motor on that thing with the drive shaft going to the two rear wheels. And 80% of the population that buys that truck would be totally satisfied.
Yeah, but it's nice to have something like
trust
that.
Trust me. As a guy who drives a dog 4Runner, and there's a million 4Runners being sold,
yeah.
Trust me. If it looked cool and it was just slightly capable, most people would be fine, all right?
I don't know. I that's one of the fastest and biggest vehicles, heaviest vehicles I've ever been in.
I get that. I understand that.
I think it's awesome. And once you have that option... It's just like any Tesla. Why wouldn't you get the dual motor? Why wouldn't you get the Plaid? Why wouldn't you?
Because sometimes you just need something to work.
Whatever. You and your practicality. Go ahead.
It's the Toyota in me. I'm sorry. Uh-huh. Anyway, pricing for the R2 is expected to start around $45,000. The R3 will be priced below the R2, making the Rivian vehicles more accessible to more people. Rivian's development teams have been intensely focused on costs through manufacturing, design, innovation, and robust supply chain development. You can reserve one for $100, Daryl. Deliveries are expected to begin in the first half of 2026.
Not bad.
No.
I do like the hatchback version, whatever that is.
The hot hatch?
Yeah. I think that's pretty cool. Definitely has like an 80s vibe to it.
Right. So a lot of people, we posted that on our Facebook, and people were comparing it to, what, a Lancia or something? What was it?
The Lada Niva, the Russian car that's kind of a
But the thing is, it's really SUV. Big. If you were to actually take that physical model and put it up against the Rivian, it probably would look dwarfed, right?
Maybe.
Yeah, it would be like tiny compared to it.
It has some stature, so that's a little, it's kind of a selling point. I also like the fact that it's a departure from, I like trucks. I think everybody's trucked out.
I agree with that.
And, you know, at the point, I think we've reached peak truck in this country.
Yeah.
When Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show a couple years ago was like, you know, I think I need a truck. And this is a guy who, like, lives in New York. I think he lives in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm about getting an F-150. And I'm like, I'm not one of those people that judges because I hate people do that. What do you need a big truck for? Because I do. It's freedom, America, whatever. Eagles. But also, when Jimmy Fallon's like, I think I need a truck. I'm like, what? Are you doing a lot of runs to RP Lumber on the weekend, Jimmy? Like, what are you doing?
Home Depot, some potted plants,
right.
A bag of fertilizer. I mean, that's all I can ever think about when I see somebody like that buy a truck, right?
Yeah, they're not really using it.
Let's go to the antique store, find that chair, you know, what you want to get or whatever. It
turns into like an L.L. Bean commercial.
Yeah.
And you're like, come on, dude. Nobody lives like that. But also, I think it's good to see EVs in practical applications where, sure, you can get a truck. But realistically, people are buying EVs to do, you know, the run to work, the commuter car, the buzz around with the family. That's why I like the new Prius. I like some of the, that Hyundai Ioniq 5 I think is great. I think that's a neat little EV. Just saw one of those the other day, and I thought, you know what, for like a daily, that might be kind of fun. But yeah, we'll see what Rivian does with these, and I wish them the best.
We always do. All right, you ready for him? You know who he is, don't you?
I sure do. Let me see if I can find
his theme song.
Yeah, let me get there.
All right, it's time for your moment of Musk. Hey, it's been a long time since I got to say something where he's not like sticking. Never mind, I'm not going to get too sexual with this thing. Anyway, it's moment of Musk.
It sounded like Mr. Ed.
You ever heard of Will? The price of Dogecoin. You ever heard of Dogecoin, Daryl?
I have.
Doubled in the last month amid rumors that it could be soon integrated into Elon Musk's X platform. The tech billionaire, who's a vocal advocate for meme-inspired cryptocurrency, has previously spoken of his plan to build an everything app, and that incorporates messaging, marketplaces, and online payments. On Monday, he shared an animation from an ex-user, Doge Designer, showing his former payments platform merging with a social media app that he took over in 2022. "The circle will be complete," he commented. And that is your moment of Musk.
Such high quality.
Yeah, wasn't Dogecoin like the whole thing that this isn't backed by anything but just faith?
Yeah, and I thought he was like a huge fan of it.
Yeah, so every time he like acts like he's going to put Dogecoin as like a payment option for Tesla or something like that, it like goes up. Mm-hmm. So Elon basically says, you know what? I need a little money. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to sell tennis shoes. I'm just going to make a comment about Dogecoin.
Sure.
Next thing you know, boom, he makes like $1 billion.
Because
right?
We saw that. Remember when he hosted Saturday Night Live?
Yes, yes.
And he had like a couple sketches where he was like talking about Dogecoin.
Yeah, and it went up.
It went way up. And everybody's like, ha, ha, ha. I'm like, what is going on?
Oh, he's manipulating the market. It's crazy. Yeah. So
it's like every time you say McChicken, McDonald's stock goes up, right?
No, I don't think that's how it works.
Spicy McChicken?
No. My bowels.
McGurgles?
McGurgle.
Stock just went down. Did you know that? Did you see that McDonald's brought back the steak, egg, and cheese bagel, by the way?
No.
Yeah.
Ooh, I might be in on that.
Yeah, so that's a thing. Yeah. And they were supposed to release
it. What could the steak be like now versus what it was 10 years ago? I mean.
Bioengineered steak-like product?
Have you ever gotten a Five Below steak or a Dollar Tree steak?
No. I think those are called steakums.
No, I've gotten a steak from Dollar Tree.
Are you serious?
Serious.
It's, like in the freezer?
It's super thin in the freezer section. You take it and don't thaw it out ahead of time, because if you do that, it comes out in almost like a goopy, gloppy, fat thing. But if you take it frozen, you slap it on a skillet, it smells like steak, it tastes like steak. And you can put it with your eggs. It's good.
Put it on a hot plate. You know, if you need dinner sometime, sorry, just call us.
Yes, call me. I'll hook you up with a...
Now, I also saw McDonald's is also going to start selling Krispy Kremes in their stores.
Why not?
I'm like,
what the hell?
We're just grasping at anything and everything.
I mean, every time you think about WALL-E or you think about Idiocracy, we creep closer and closer, right?
Not that far off.
I mean, seriously, we could have The Rock talking about buying donuts at McDonald's, and people be like, you know what, it must be the best thing in the world because The Rock said to do it, right?
That's so bad.
That's where we're at. Or Vin Diesel, or, you know.
Is he popular?
I think
anymore?
So. I think so.
Maybe.
I can't keep track.
Speaking of popular, you know what, I think you need to be more popular.
I think I need some shopping therapy, Daryl.
I think so.
I don't know if you ever do this. I mean, my wife, she feels like her life is complete if she just goes out and she browses, maybe does some window shopping, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Sure.
Oh, let's go over here. Let's go look at Macy's windows. Let's go look at, Burgers is gone. I don't even know where women go anymore. They go to Kohl's.
Target, Home Goods. My wife's at Home Goods all the time.
Kohl's Bucks. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, I don't know if it's the same thing in your house, Daryl, but my wife loves to shop.
Yeah.
But if I shop, it's a problem.
Is there a difference in the dollar amounts we're shopping with or for?
Maybe, because sometimes when I'm in my window shopping is so much more practical. I don't drag her out. I don't say, hey, let's go to East Peoria so I can go look at cars. I just bring it right to her. I literally lift my laptop up and I hold it up and I say, look at what I found. and I get shot down like a dog in the street every
Ejected.
Time. Yeah, yeah. You know what? It's fine. It's, that's this is what marriage is. It's a one-way street. You know what? That's Cars of the Week, folks. Cars of the Week.
That was your intro. Nice. Well played.
Yeah, thank you.
I was going to say your Michael J. Fox was good, but that might have just topped it.
Yeah, thanks. Anyway, Cars of the Week is where Daryl and I, we invariably find cars online, and we think, I mean, I swear to God, so close. You know, if I could just get my hands on this car. Not as close as last month's episode, where I almost bought a car within like $10. But
you really dodged a bullet there, my friend.
No
really
doubt.
Really did.
Yeah. But no, we actually, we're ready. We have sold this in our soul, and generally speaking, it gets knocked down in one fell swoop. And that's kind of where I was at this week. I didn't tell my wife about this car. I did tell you and Jake about it, though.
Okay, so that's where, I know this showed up in a group chat.
It did.
Okay.
And I tell you what, I was enamored by this car. This is on Bring a Trailer. It's a 39,000-mile 2010 Bentley Continental Flying Spur. I mean, the Flying Spur name alone is worth like 10 or 15 grand, right?
I would think so.
And this car is only 14 years old. It's a 39,000-mile car. It's beautiful. Let me read a little bit of the description, but I want you to know this while I read it. This car has a California and Hawaiian title, so you know it's been well taken care of. It's a 2010 Continental. It's a Flying Spur. It's powered by a twin turbocharged 6-liter W12. I've never even owned a W12, Angela. I mean, come on. We got to have one in our lifetime, right?
Sure.
It powers all four wheels through its 6-speed automatic transaxle. It's a cypress gray color. It's very classy. It's beige leather. It has torsion center differential. It has 20-inch spoke wheels, which 20, they seem like a luxury 14 years ago, but it's kind of like,
yeah.
I think even my Highlander comes with that.
Right.
It's got a glass sunroof. It's got bi-xenon headlights. That's very progressive for its time. Soft closed doors, parking sensor, heated ventilated roofs and seats, and rear view camera, 12-speaker sound system, cruise control, all that good stuff. But again, 39,000 miles. This is a gorgeous car. Again, Hawaii car, W12, 6-liter. Yes, I want that. 39,000 miles. Even if it's a Bentley and I can't afford to maintain the car, how much can be wrong with it at 39,000 miles? Probably not a whole lot. What are you
okay.
laughing at?
No,
you,
it's fine.
What are you
God,
laughing at?
I'm sorry.
At?
Keep
anyway.
Going. Sorry. Sorry.
Now, to be fair, to think about this, the car ended up selling on Bring a Trailer for $34,000, which looked like a pretty good deal because the MSRP of this car was $177,000.
Wow.
And if you bought the car in Illinois, you got hit with that additional 5% luxury tax. So you were paying $197,000. This is a $200,000 rig driven 40,000 miles that you could get for $34,000. I mean, this is a no-brainer, folks. I mean, if Bitcoin fell that much, you'd buy $30,000 in Bitcoin just knowing it's going to turn back around, right? I did the math, so you don't have to.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, I'm looking at your I'm checking your work here.
So It's $163,000 in depreciation over 14 years. That seems like a lot, but when you break it up by 14 years, that's only $11,000 a year. Now, to be fair, if you bought a new Yukon today, you'd probably lose $11,000 right off the bat, right?
Yeah.
And maybe even the second year you might lose $10,000. So, I mean, we ask a lot here, $11,642 per year, to be really specific, or if you break it up by the mileage, and this is where it gets a little bit of conundrum, because I think with that low mileage, that car should be worth more.
But I would think so.
I would think so, too. But realistically, the drop was $4 per mile that person drove that car. Every mile they drove that 39,000 miles, that car depreciated $4 plus. That doesn't seem like much. I mean, I did the math again. You know what we do, Daryl, on the weekends?
You do math?
My wife, yeah, no.
I don't know.
During the week in my office, I do the math. This is what I do when I don't want to work. So my wife and I, if we're going to lollygag on the weekend and we don't want to work around the house, what do? We drive to Costco. And I live out in Tremont, Illinois. It's just a saunter of 17 miles to Costco and then come back. It's a 34 miles round trip. If you do the math at $4 for round trip, that's only $136 for a round trip to Costco and back for the weekend, right?
That's way more than an Uber.
Oh, plus gas. That didn't include gas either.
And you figure gas with a twin turbo 6 liter W12s, probably 10.
And if it takes premium, God bless it. You know.
Yeah. So none of this seems like a good financial decision, even at $34,000. You're still going to stand by this?
Yes, I think I if I'm going to buy a Bentley. Would you rather buy a Bentley from like the mid 80s or the early 90s, or would you just go for one right from 2010?
No, honestly, this is smarter. but both of those.
You said it.
These are your words. I feel like that's still not a great decision either way, but that is a significant cost savings, and it will cost you the same amount to maintain a 2010 Bentley as it would a 2024. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about, I feel like that's not that many miles for a car like this. And I started laughing because it's not. And there's a reason why. You know, maybe it's because it was titled in Hawaii. Maybe it didn't travel that much. You know, you can only go so far in Hawaii.
Yeah, sure.
But I feel like there's probably another reason why. And I look at things like twin turbo, British car, W12 motor.
But it's a Volkswagen W. Is it the same W12 that would have been in the...
Yeah, like the Phaeton. Yeah.
That's even better. So it's got a little heritage with another manufacturer, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Soft
so close. If I need to get a gasket or something, I can just run down to the VW store.
Sure. Yeah, you can just do that. Just go to the VW store.
Just go to Auto House.
And be so like,
yeah, I need a head gasket for a W12.
Are you putting this on yourself, sir? Oh, yeah. My garage, my tools. These tools don't fit on this car. The other funny part.
What was the sign, the line from Fast Times at Ridgemont High? My cousin's got a toolbox or something like that.
I forget. Yeah.
Anyway.
I need to watch that movie again. No, good pick. I will say this. I like the color on that car probably more than most of them you see are like that pearl white.
Yes.
Black or, you know, kind of a flashier kind of. Like more formal color. Mm-hmm. This makes it look like approachable. In fact, at first glance, I kind of looked at it and I'm like, that's a Jaguar S-Type. Mm-hmm. It's not. But it could be.
It's a gigantic car. I think in real life, if you were to get close to it. I mean, look at that slider patio door that's next to the hood.
Yeah, that's like a 10-foot slider. The hood's that big. Yeah, I give you credit, man. You kind of stepped outside your comfort zone with this one.
Oh, this one's totally off. Nobody could have picked this one from a mile away.
Uh-huh. Gray Poupon. Yes. I think that you need that and this car and, you know, have a nice time.
Like I said, and like I told you and Jake, that Angela could just blow to work at 100 miles an hour in this thing.
Sure she could.
And as Jake noted, that she does the same thing in the Prius, so she really doesn't need a Bentley to do that.
Nah, use three times the fuel.
Yeah.
Probably more than that. Good pick.
Thanks.
I applaud that.
Cars
effort.
Of the week. This is what it's all about.
I think
why pick something you would normally buy, Daryl Scott?
I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me.
All right, what's your pick?
This thing. Oh, by the way, you did some more math.
Oh, I did. I did do a quick rundown of the most expensive cars to drive, and just so you know, the 5-year cost of ownership, the worst Porsche with a 5-year cost of ownership of $90,000.
Wow.
Land Rover. My buddy George wants to buy a Land Rover. It's $81,000. Mercedes Benz $74,000. BMW $70,000. Jaguar $70,000. Audi 61 and Lincoln 61. Tesla comes in the top 10 here at 57,000.
That's
No thanks. And Ram, I was surprised Ram's in the middle of the list here at 47,000.
47,200.
Have fun with that.
Yeah, math. Numbers are fun.
Right. What do you got, Daryl?
Speaking of numbers.
Ooh, yours is kind of like mine, but it's really old.
Yeah, but it's a nice big formal sedan. So I went into the Wayback Machine for my pick this week, and I picked a 1947 Packard Custom Super Clipper 7-passenger sedan, a.k.a. factory limousine.
7 passengers. 3 front, 4 back?
Yeah, probably 3 in the front, 2 jump seats, and 3, 6, 7.
Carry the,
I don't
carry
know.
The one.
Carry the one. I forget. I don't know how they capture that. But anyways, it's a 7-passenger. Basically a formal limousine, and it's the classic timeless Packard design, just a big, it looks like something somebody should get out and have like a stogie and like tails and a top hat. It looks very formal. It's a pretty rare car. You don't see too many of them because they only made 1,790 of them that year, 1947. The ad listing says it was restored. It's got a 356 cubic inch straight 8-cylinder. Runs like a Swiss watch, they say. That's a great.
Oh, it's got like a mini seat that pops up in the middle.
Oh, a little jump seat?
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
That's awkward, but kind of cool.
Would you like to be the person sitting there?
No, no.
Want to ride in my limo? Sure.
Yeah.
Flip this little like dinky seat up.
What even sucks is if you're in the far back of that giant. I mean, this car is gigantic. There's like 6 feet between the front seat and the back seat, but then they throw in this like bonus seat. So now I had the luxury of sitting in the luxury car, but now some butthead throws kids like in front of me.
You're sitting there. They're hitting the paddleball thing.
Yeah. But it looks like they fold into the back of the driver's seat.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Really neat car from an era that... You know, bygone era, but people always do appreciate a nice formal sedan. This would be a fun one to have. By the way, it's $42,500 for this car.
My car is way better value.
Yeah, I think so. But the thing of it is this one is one you could rent out for weddings. This is
the handwriting on the ad. Did you look at that?
No, which one? The last picture?
Yeah, the guy wrote. He handwrote blue ink.
Yeah,
it's not even legal. It's not black ink.
Yeah, and I love. I don't know. He's got good penmanship though, so he seems trustworthy. Purchased by current owner 20 years ago in Connecticut.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, this definitely reeks of grandpa selling a car. Can somebody take a picture of his stuff and put it on the Facebook? I don't know. I like these things. I like big cars, and
this
I cannot lie.
Long. It's long.
It's a huge car. Would definitely not fit in any of our garages. Well, fit in your outbuilding.
Yeah.
But I got to hand it to you this week. I'm going to say your pick, probably the better of the two.
But to be fair, yours has more flags on the grill.
It does. It does. Looks like President Eisenhower is supposed to roll out of there, right? Truman.
Yeah,
I guess it would have been Truman.
Or was entombed in it, one of the two. They drove him through the mall.
Could be. Everybody just pays their respects. Yeah. At any rate, is that going to do it?
I think that's it. I think that's enough of a show for this is all the show you deserve, folks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Harsh. Leave them wanting more, Eric, or insult them. One of those two.
Well, you know, we gave so much this week. We gave a pre-show, and you know what? If you're a Patreon subscriber, you know what you got, and you we thank you all for your support. And
no takesies backsies either.
No. No, I mean this is basically Pandora's box. You opened it,
yeah.
So now you're getting videos.
That's right.
Yeah, shame on you.
Also, send us an email. Let us know how we're doing, and if there's something that we're not covering, or you're like, yeah, you guys talk too much about this or that,
or you guys just don't make enough shows. Actually, don't send those because
we know.
Yeah.
info@thrownwrenches.com. You can find us there. Eric, we're also on Instagram. We're at Throwing Wrenches.
You know, maybe we should make that a joint account at some point. I don't know.
We should.
Yeah.
Or just start a new one.
Maybe.
Because I don't know how you transfer. I don't know.
We'll and the tick of the talk. I mean, what's your handle on TikTok, Throwing Wrenches?
Yeah, Throwing Wrenches.
And I got Planet Stall, but there's not much car stuff there.
No,
if you want to just watch, like, car stuff from me, you can just go to the Forts Toyota page.
You could.
Yeah.
Or the Forts Trail Team page.
Yeah, that one.
Did you lose that?
That's a long story. Somebody set it up. I can't recover the account. It's all garbage. So
we'll talk later about it.
If somebody is like a guru on that stuff, please help me out.
Yeah. We need to get some intellectual property rights up in here.
Exactly. I'm calling a lawyer.
All right. Anyways.
And I'm going to drive my flying spur. Actually, I think this is my lawyer's old car.
That sounds painful. Flying spurs. At any rate, we'll see you next time. I'm Daryl Scott.
I'm Eric Stahl.
Peace.
Oh.
It should be wrapping up.
What's the time on that one?
Painful. 1:33.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a while.
It has been a while. I didn't feel like... I mean, we did read through a lot of news, but you know what? Again, because of the meta on it, I thought we should just run through them all.
I like it.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But it's been a while since we show.
Yeah, it actually is. Yeah, Sarah's texting me. When are you leaving? I'm like, what?
It is late. I'm sorry.
No, it's not.
10:49.
Oh, shit. I thought it was 9.
Wait, honest to God, it was like 30 minutes ago. I think short Mona must be good.
Mm-hmm.
The week I thought it was a little long. That's okay.
Yeah, projects.
It was a fun call.
I went too long on projects.
That's okay. I wanted you to talk about that stuff you had going on.
Yeah, it lends credence to why we haven't done shit, so...